conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. It has been an emotional week for homeless communities in D.C. and New York City, culminating with the arrest of a suspect in the shootings and murders of homeless men. The homeless are some of a city's most vulnerable. The crimes highlight just how exposed they are to violence. How can the homeless be better protected? Well, joining me to break down the complexities of this question are Dr. Altaf Hussain, professor and co-chair of human behavior and the social environment in the Howard University School of Social Work. Also joining us, Kelly Michael Williams, advocate for the homeless and board member with the Covenant House in D.C. If you have a comment, if you have a question about this issue, we invite you to give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or follow me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Hussain, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
My pleasure. Looking forward to it.
And Kelly, good to talk to you again.
It's my pleasure, Harold. Thank you for having me back.
So let me start with you, because you are very familiar with homelessness, not just as an advocate, but someone who was once homeless. Talk to me about the arrest of Gerald Brevard III, the suspect in the shootings in New York and in D.C. What were those people who you advocate for feeling? Did you have a chance to talk to them about this?
Well, again, thank you, Harold, for having us. And I want to commend the young detective who, using his instincts and the power of social media to look into and see a pattern, notify and get in contact with his former colleagues in New York, and then being able to present it here to the Metropolitan Police Department and get the results that we got, which is the arrest of the gentleman. And I would say that if you remember the conversation we had before, that is the main things that those of us who were homeless out there on the street, but those who are currently out there on the street, are most fearful of. The young folks that we deal with at Covenant House, their greatest fear is being sex trafficked.
Right.
And then the adults is, you know, being mugged, murdered, if they're women, raped, and the like. So the fear is real. Let me say that. The idea that sleeping on the streets is something that people want to do. It's more of what they have to do, and it's more of where they have come to resign themselves to be. If you give them a home, not a shelter, because a lot of folks will opt out of the shelter because the same things are happening in the shelter. So they may opt out to be on the street. But the street is not where they want to be. Mm-hmm. They want to be in a safe and secure environment, and that being their own home, their own domain, their own place where they can, you know, come and go, live, and be safe in. So right now, as you said in your opening remarks, the community, the homeless community, is in a, you know, an uncertain place. They are probably sleeping a little bit better tonight, or will be, but it's just one person. It could be another person tomorrow. So they're still in that same state of flux of what's next, what's going to happen. And like I said when I was on your show before, I was with my son, who was 3 years old at the time. So I was definitely afraid, even to the extent of saying, you know, I'm a grown A man, I'll do whatever I have to. But you can't do too much to a 9mm.
Yeah.
Or a hollow point bullet. You can't do anything with that except receive it. So, again, I commend MPD for what they've done. But it's a volatile situation, Harold.
Yeah. Dr. Hussain, prior to the arrest, of the suspect this week. D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser ordered all homeless people off the streets and into a shelter to be protected. Your thoughts about that, particularly based on what Kelly just shared with us, your thoughts about that, and it was a suggestion. It wasn't so much an order, but she did say that all people who are unhoused and sleeping on the streets to a shelter. Do you think that that was something that could have worked in protecting the homeless?
Well, again, thank you so much for having me.
Sure.
And this happens to be Social Work Month, and the theme is actually the time is right for social work. So when we talk about, you know, the idea that the mayor was reacting to an unfolding, if you will, and completely uncertain crisis, you know, she made the right call in terms of saying this is something we should do and provide shelter. The reality of it is that, well, if it takes a crisis like a shooter that is, you know, on the loose, if you will, and then suddenly we have shelters available for all of these folks who are unhoused. And as my colleague just mentioned, you know, those who wish to continue, you know, to not seek the shelters, that's fine. But if we have the possibility to house them and to be able to, you know, provide safety and security, by all means. The reality of it is that we should be doing this year round. And not just, you know, when a crisis pops up. We should be doing our best to find affordable housing, to find alternatives. And to some degree, you know, the district is, you know, helpful in that regard because they have what's known as the Comprehensive Street Outreach Network. And they do their best to actually meet folks on the street who are unhoused and try to engage them, provide case management. But as what she was doing, I think, you know, was just making a call out there to say, we can't sit here and do nothing. So everybody who is able to support us and help us by moving folks into shelters, let's do that for the time being. But as I said, it should be a year-round effort.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about how to make homelessness, how to protect the homeless. Is it possible to protect the homeless if they are sleeping on the streets? If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. All of this coming on the heels of the arrest of a suspect in the shootings and killings of homeless men in D.C. and New York City this week. Kelly, Dr. Hussein just spoke about affordable housing, but I need to take a step back because, and correct me if I'm wrong, there is a difference between making affordable housing available and housing the homeless. It is, affordable housing is very, very subjective, particularly when you're talking about a place like Washington, D.C., New York City, Seattle, Washington, San Francisco, California, some of the most expensive cities in the country to live. And so that may be relative to, you know, what the market, you know, one person's affordable housing is a next person's unobtainable housing.
Absolutely, Harold. The first thing that popped into my mind when Doctor said that, and I commend him for, you know, sharing the reality of what we're facing right now, is that we can't keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. That's the definition of insanity. Am I right, Doctor?
Yes, sir.
Because what we're doing is we're waiting for the crisis, and then we say, everyone jump into the shelter. Well, two things with that, Harold. First of all, that call went out. I don't know any of those homeless people are sitting in front of their TV to hear that call. So the reality of it is that they can't hear that call. The second thing is, like the doctor said, if there's that much shelter available for everyone who is homeless, why are they on the street? If we have housing, then we need to put them in housing. and not sheltered housing, but permanent housing. Right now, we're spending millions of dollars to put homeless families that that we have in hotels. We're paying entrepreneurs to house our homeless. And now we're talking about buying the hotels from those entrepreneurs at astronomical rates. But if, like the doctor says, if there is housing available, why do we have to wait for a crisis every time we respond to something?
But is there housing available? I mean, the counting of the homeless year after year is at best difficult. And as you know, not every homeless person is homeless for the same reason. Some of them may have been victims of a brutal economy, but others may have health issues. Some may have mental health issues. Some may have other familial issues that prevent them from living there. And so all homelessness is not created equally.
Yeah.
Correct.
You mentioned the count year after year. So, you know, in the 2021, the point in time count that the district does, for example, it usually happens in the third or fourth week of January. And they found in the latest one about 5,111. The population of the district is about 690,000. So we're talking about trying to find some kind of housing, as my friend Kelly said, for permanent housing for less than 1% of the population. So even if we didn't count all of the folks on that one night, because it's a point in time, it's just whoever is out when the volunteers go out. So the reality is, it's always, is there a will to get it done? Now, let me, compare things, but we can't just look past these things. Ukraine is a war that started less than three weeks ago. And Congress has already talked about millions, approaching billion, of funding available for a war that's not touching us directly, for a war that's not involving our population directly. Yes, we are always sad when life is lost and, you know, people's countries are being torn apart. But where is that money when we say, here, right here in the nation's capital, on literally the sidewalks in front of the Capitol building, if not too far from it for security reasons, there are folks saying, I'm dying here from too much cold or too much heat or whatever, and we keep saying it's not affordable because it's D.C. or New York or whatever, but we can find all this money to help, you know, whenever, it literally overnight. So that becomes the question. Is there a will to make folks, to be able to put people into, you know, this housing? And by the way, typically in D.C., you're also finding a higher numbers of black and brown people. So then you go back to what the school social work talks about with the black perspective. If you value black lives, is there something happening here when suddenly, when it's less than 1%, or about 5,000, even if it's 10,000 people in the district that need permanent housing, we don't have money. We can't find it. We don't know where it is. We don't know where it'll come from. That's what I would say.
We are talking.
Or we're wasting it.
We are talking about homelessness, and can the homeless be protected? Can they be made safer even under these difficult conditions of homelessness? If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810. Let's quickly go to Ava. Ava, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you. Hi, everybody.
Real quick, Ava, you've got 30 seconds. What's on your mind?
I don't understand why somebody can be homeless for so long in his own country where it's full of opportunities. And then they can help themselves. They can work like everybody else. But it's not saying I'm working so hard as immigrant, who come here working so hard and pay all these high taxes to help somebody that can help themselves. That's my question. Thank you.
Thank you. I need you to hold the response to what Ava just said about those who come here, immigrants, and who are working to help themselves. I already know what both of you are going to say, so I'm going to let you have at that. But until, but I need to take a break. Oh, my goodness. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. And I'm Harold Fisher. So look, you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. So you definitely want to do that. But if you're on the phone, hang on. We'll be talking to you in a bit. We will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This discussion continues in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're talking about the homeless. How can they be better protected? My guests are Dr. Altaf Hussain, professor and co-chair for human behavior and the social environment in the Howard University School of Social Work. Also, Kelly Michael Williams, advocate for the homeless and board member with the Covenant House in D.C. Lines are open. If you can't get through, please keep trying. I promise I will get to you at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Kelly, I'll let you respond to that last call first.
I'll be honest, Harold, I could not hear her clearly, but I heard what you were saying. And I'll say this, as Dr. Hussain was saying, it's about a will. It's about the will of our local government and the will of our federal government. We have already spent, I think, $3 billion to give a number to what Dr. Hussain was saying in the war that we are not a part of, our ally. Ukraine is. We lost $82 million here in D.C., and the Inspector General came out last year saying that it was, you know, spent somewhere or wasted. That was supposed to be used to help keep people in the houses and help the homeless. If that's what we're doing with our money, and the people that are in charge of our money is doing that, then we need to look at why do we keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results? We have to look at the will of the people. Now, granted, as Dr. Hussain said, the majority of those out there, the majority of the folks who are in this position look like us there on this phone, on this interview and on this radio show. And that could be the impetus of where the will is, because we have to ask ourselves, if the population is, as Dr. Hussain said, less than 1%, 5,000 people, but yet we're looking to adjust to 30% AMI, as you said, Harold, affordability is relative to the person we're talking to. Some people are working homeless, but some people are homeless because they don't have a job. So they can't pay 30% AMI to find affordable housing. So affordability, like you said, is relative. So we have to have a will to want to address the issue, address it the same way we want to address growth, the same way we want to address bringing dollars into the district. We have to be able to address this issue of homelessness because it is a crisis. It's a pandemic, and it gets worse every year. It doesn't get better. It keeps getting worse. And as the pandemic has shown us, we can find new ways to do things. We just have to have the courage to change course and do it.
Dr. Hussain?
That is the problem.
Dr. Hussain? I don't know. Did you hear what the last caller was saying?
I think he mentioned something about immigrants, but if you can repeat.
I'll paraphrase, but she was talking about people who come to this country, immigrants who come to this country and, you know, with little or nothing and are able to work themselves into
I know exactly what she's talking about, and I think we need to really stop stop speaking like that. Because
I wish I would have heard it. That's all right.
I have my own thoughts about that as well. Yeah, but please, so go right ahead, Dr. Hussain.
What's happening is that, and by the way, what we teach at the School of Social Work is two courses. One is on unhoused and homelessness and disasters, and the other one is on immigrants and refugees. So that's a constant thing that people keep repeating, that, well, why don't you look at those people? Well, how come they can make it? You know, they can pull themselves up by the bootstraps. Well, that bootstrap idea started way back in the 1800s. When there was nobody, you know, going to Ohio and Illinois and other places in the Midwest, and the government opened up and said, hey, you can come and get like 160 acres of land for free if you just stay on it for 5 years. And then now you look around and say, look at immigrants coming, and then they can do better. Well, they're coming with a level of education, with a level, you know, a profession perhaps. They're not dealing with systemic, deep, entrenched, centuries-old racism right here in America, where a person could have the best wishes. And by the way, we're not even speaking about the fact that this person who's arrested, I forgot his last name.
Brevard, yes.
Yeah, the one who was arrested. His mother said, an associate's degree in computer science, an intelligent man who would love to probably take care of his family and fulfill all of their, you know, the dreams of every person. But there are mental health issues clearly that people are talking about. Then we can't say, oh, well, he can't make it, you know, but the immigrants can. Well, that's not a fair comparison at all, by any means.
And I also think that she missed the point that we're not talking about people who are struggling with drug abuse.
Correct.
Who are struggling with alcoholism, who are struggling with mental health issues, who may be struggling with physical health issues.
Yeah.
I understand her point about immigrants coming over here and finding a way. Yeah, that's the American dream. It's been that way for hundreds of years. It has been done with other kinds of obstacles against immigrants of color, as well as immigrants who are white. But that's not the population that we're not talking about immigrants here. We are talking about people who have had other kinds of struggles that prevent them from being housed. And before I go back to the phone lines, one of the other things that we spoke about in the beginning, and I'll ask you about this, Kelly, this has to do with the shelters. If the homeless population is afraid to go into the shelters because some of the same things that happen on the streets are happening in the shelters, would it not be prudent, cheaper even, to make the shelters safer?
It would be, absolutely. There's a young lady that I met about, I would say, I think probably about 3 months ago. She's living in a tent on New York Avenue. I just happened to be over there doing some filming, and she came up to me, and we started talking, and I found out that in 2020, she was an IT analyst working I think a government contract or some type of contract, and lost her job.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, after that, she ended up losing her son to foster care, and now she's living in a tent on New York Avenue. She is an exception to it because she still is trying to be resourceful. She's still trying to, you know, do some contracting jobs and do things, but she herself told me she's going to videotape what goes on in the shelter. She told me that the things in the shelters, that not only is it from the people who live in the shelter, but even staff just kind of ignore the people in the shelter like they're dirt, like they're trash, like they don't care about them. There's no aptitude for them to engage with the folks there to try to help them or assist them. It's more so that they're just there to sort of babysit, watch them, or what have you. And they kind of much let things happen as they are. Now, some people say, well, she's just saying that because she's out in the street. I don't know. I'm going to wait for the video to see firsthand. But what I am going to say is that if she's telling me that unprompted and telling us, like, this is why the folks that she's around are on the street with her as opposed to going to the shelter, then there's something wrong. because as Dr. Hussain said, if we can say there's a crisis and everyone can jump up and say, come to the shelter, and everyone can go to the shelter, then as you said, it should be much more easier, much more prudent, much more, feasible for us to allow them to go into the shelter and raise their quality of life and be able to take away the aesthetics of these tent cities popping up across the whole city, with the people who live in these neighborhoods getting quite upset about the fact that tents are right down at the end of their street and they have to walk past them every day, and that's what their tax dollars are paying for.
Let me go to the phone.
What they want to have.
Let me go to the phone lines, 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Michelle calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
What she said is the truth. Even in D.C., Maryland, wherever you go, half of these people that work in those shelters are criminals themselves or been homeless themselves and don't care. They forget where they come from. And then on top of that, half of your government peoples and stuff that works in these agencies and stuff are cons or used to be police officers or used to be, you know, alcoholics or on drugs themselves. So another thing that they do is that they take your information and steal whatever you got for yourself. So I'm dealing with things that I came here about, and basically the court cases, they're reopening closed court cases from years ago and redoing them and making me homeless, and I shouldn't be. And some of the stuff that I own, they're running me off of my properties and stuff, even if my name is on it. They're running me off my properties and just taking my stuff. So now, which leave me out here in my car to be homeless. And on top of that, you got the police is following you, you know, running your plate. I'm like, y'all should know my name by heart, you know, as much as you be running behind me or stalking me, you know. So it's a lot of crooked things that's happening here. And like the judges called it, white-collar, blue-collar crimes. That meaning banks, organizations, different things like this.
Okay, well, Michelle, let me stop you there, because I think this illustrates, Dr. Hussain, the complexities of homelessness in the city, which goes back to that previous phone call. This isn't about getting a job and working your way up. There are all kinds of issues.
Yep, and I appreciate, and I want to acknowledge the fact that our heart hurts for the caller, you know, and she's talking about, I think, being herself currently unhoused and facing all of these challenges. So the reality of this is that we need a cross-systems collaboration. We need not only, you know, the Department of Human Services in D.C., we need, you know, the legal system, we need the school system, we need the health system, all of them to come together to say, it's not going to take a long time to figure out how to 5,000, because we're talking about the district, you know, 5,000 to 6,000 people. Can we talk about case management? Can we talk about making sure that everyone, like this lady is talking about, where she owns property, if that's the case, and somehow she's been run out. So someone somewhere is taking advantage of the system, of knowing that someone has fallen into hard times and they will not be able to fight me legally if I take anything from them or if I, you know, occupy their home or their property or whatever. So here what we're finding, as you mentioned, complex, is that there is an intersection of various aspects of a person's life. And if we go back and say, look, at the end of the day, this is someone's father. This is someone's mother. This is someone's aunt, someone's grandmother, someone's uncle. This is not just a human being in a vacuum that just showed up and is unhoused. They have a life. They have a story. Let it unfold, and then let us figure out where and how we can intervene, and then have the will to get it done. See it through all the way to the end.
Michelle, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Mr. Jones calling from Southeast D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I like the first one. I got two comments, two things. One, I hear what everybody's talking about right now, and everybody's situation is just different. Because I had a brother who was in the shelter for 6 years. He was homeless on the street, and he managed to get into a shelter for 6 years and they helped my brother. He got him a nice apartment right now in Chinatown, and he's also working. So what he refuses to do is just to sit around and do nothing and wait for somebody to help him. He got down to business and start pushing that button and going to these places and you know, making things work for him. Mm-hmm. So I can't say everybody's situation is the same, because I don't know what the other people went through with being homeless and in them shelters, but I know what my brother went to, because I used to go uptown when he was on the street and give him money and food. And then he turned all that around from being downhill and picked himself up to get uphill. So I don't know what everybody else's situation is, but I'm like, you know, I feel everybody's pain, but all shelters are not bad. Some of those shelters, people do their job, so I'm not going to throw everybody on the bus. And secondly, why does it take a crisis for the mayor to want to do something? I mean, she's been mayor for, she's trying to get her third year term, you know, in office. Don't wait for a crisis. You have resources. If she really want to do something, she can do something. Instead of sitting back waiting for a guy to run around killing homeless people. No, that's not right. Anytime a building goes up, she gets her cut on it. You know, anytime there's something bad happens, then she wants to show her face. Don't show your face until something happens. Do like Marion Barry back in the day. Marion Barry ain't wait for something to happen. Marion Barry was for the people. He made it happen.
Okay. Mr. Jones, thank you so much for your comment. Kelly, what is a possible solution for addressing the homeless issue? Okay, we saw what happened under the previous mayor, Mayor Gray, closing the D.C. General Hospital. And, of course, we saw the plan to spread out the homeless population. But we still obviously have a homeless issue. And let us say this is not a D.C. issue. This is a national issue. And so from your perspective, with all of the complexities of the different situations, whether you have a situation like Mr. Jones' brother, or you may have a situation where someone needs much, much more help, how do you do it? Do you throw money at it? Do you build a city with resources for the homeless? What do you do?
I think, Harold, you have to look at it from sort of, I guess, a new age or a new wave of thinking, because throwing money at it, but throwing the money at the same people who you threw it at before to do something and it didn't work, you have to figure out something new. And you have to make it a full service situation. So you have to deal with the mental health issue. You have to deal with the ability for those individuals who have serious mental health issues to be able to function on their own if they can, and or if they can't, then find some alternative solution. For those who, like Mr. Jones's brother, who are even like myself, who was just in a bad situation, down on our luck at the moment in time we were, but we were still willing to fight and move forward and get up, then you have to be able to provide those resources. But you have to start with the permanent housing. The permanent housing will alleviate a lot of the stress and concern and allow the individual to actually be able to receive the mental health services, to be able to receive the vocational training service, to be able to receive educational services, because they're in a safe and secure environment. I was thinking about the fact that right now we're trying to build apartment buildings and say 30%, 60% and 80% AMI and all this. If we're willing to pay to put folks in a hotel and keep them there during the winter months, just build the housing. Because if you're already spending millions of dollars, build the housing. I was thinking the other day, California, Arizona, places like that, they're taking container cars and they're turning them into, you know, miniature or mini apartments, where they're basically taking these container cars, retrofitting, you know, with bathrooms, kitchens and alike, and make them permanent housing. It's cheap. It's inexpensive. The footprint is a small footprint. If we're able to build these, you know, 13, 14-story 500-unit apartment buildings, I'm sure we can take 12 or 15 container cars, stack them up, put some stairs, you know, on the back end of them, and retrofit them and make them permanent housing. I mean, let's think out of the box for a change. Let's think beyond what our normal way of thinking is and try to invest in our circumstance and the people that we're trying to help, rather than trying to invest in the people that have already taken the money and left. Let's have a will to do something different. Let's address each issue individually, but put the services in place, the wraparound services, the job training, the educational, and you do it for, you know, 3 to 4 or 5 year type of period of time where you help them address the issues that they have. You can't take someone who's been on the street for 5, 6, 7 years and just expect them to go through a vocational training and then tell them to go to a job interview and expect that they're going to have ability to have a job interview and get a job. That's not going to work. You have to be able to meet them at their meet them at their point of need and be able to help them through that process. Mm-hmm. And my theory is, let's try something different. We've been doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. Why don't we have the courage to change course and try something new? Because even if we failed at it, we're trying something new. My father used to tell me, nothing beats a failure but a try. We need to try something new.
And just to add to that, you know, oftentimes what happens is when we're training our students as Masters of Social Work students to go out there and serve, we don't want them to be hitting and saying all government is bad, all corporations are bad, all this. So the reality of what, you know, my friend Kelly just mentioned is that, yes, you can be, you know, persistent, and you can go after a goal, set it. And to some degree, Mayor Bowser, you know, and her administration has done it. You know, yes, there are places to criticize and, you know, and the places to be improved. But with the closing of DC General, which you mentioned, Harold, it at that time in 2015, there were approximately 1,500 homeless families, unhoused families in D.C. And they had been able to, within the, you know, this beginning of this year, bring it down to less than about 200 families that they were able to help find permanent housing. So to Kelly's point, when you put your mind and your will to it, you can get it done. But the fact of the matter is, it's not consistent. And it's definitely not being creative to say, well, talk about all these developers trying to come into D.C. and make a big buck with all, you know, all kinds of new development projects. Well, you can let them know. If you want to do that, if you want to get, you know, abatement on taxes and whatever, be creative. Show us how you can help us to, you know, build new units.
Exactly.
It's called mixed residential housing, whereby you have both, you know, the if you want to call it the unaffordable, or the market value rates, and then you also have the affordable rates, and all of us work together to get it done. The corporations, the government, the public sector, the nonprofit sector, and ultimately, who is going to benefit is the children that are able to come out of this in a stable setting, in a stable environment. I mean, we didn't even talk about it yet, but just from the Department of Education data, they were showing about 6,800 public school students that have experienced homelessness over the course of the year. If you think about that, good Lord. Like, that's, you know, that's children trying to just get an education. They don't even have a home to go to, and they remain unsheltered. So there are ways that we can do this, and I'm so glad and grateful, you know, WHUR starting the conversation to help us to get to that point, and hoping, you know, folks who are listening, and for you to be even, especially those who are thinking about if they're in the field or in, you know, near the field of social work, you know, apply to our program, and, you know, and get a master's degree with us, and you know, and hopefully we can together be more creative in these solutions.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. JB calling from Southeast DC. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you for taking my call. I
sure.
know there's so much in this conversation. I mean, from what the professor was saying with families, you know, or just like, you know, from the guy from Covenant House, as far as he came up with a really good thing as far as with wraparound services, 3, 4, 5 years, even the guy, Mr. Jones, who called before me. I mean, he was saying 6 years, like it was like nothing, but still, you know, that takes time versus I know some people have their stuff that's very short. You know, I realize the vulnerability of, like, you know, even with the pandemic, I was sleeping in my car for 6 months before I was able to get housed, and I had to find somebody to rent a room from before I was able to get a lease somewhere. And still, like, you see these people who are educated. You talked about the lady who was in a tent and all that. So all these things are particularly real. And I was working at the time, but I didn't earn enough to be able to get a lease. There's a lot of nuances that are there in the conversation. I would love to be able to collaborate with Covenant House or being an alum. And even I am an alum of Howard University. There was cases of when I was in the shelter system, when I see some of the colleagues who I graduated from who wasn't really trying to look out for anybody because it was like check a box if you weren't on HIV or ex-felon or whatever. It was like you weren't able to get any help when you were trying to do better for yourself to whether you were underemployed or didn't have a gig at the time. So like I said, there's a lot of caveats to it. You know, but I'm glad that you guys are trying to be a part of it.
JB, let me ask you, since you explain to us that you were living in your car for 6 months, how did you protect yourself? Were you concerned about being victimized by street crime?
So there's a lot of stuff. So the short thing was I was driving Lyft for a little bit. So it was just like for a fact of sometimes I might have gone to a rest stop. There might have been, let me find a particular place of, I'm sociable, but I'm able to keep to myself. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, I'm not going to try to be involved with certain things. Or I would even go back to almost 30 years ago. I'd take to heart the thing of when Michael Jordan's father passed or whatever, just like, if I'm going to sleep below a light and have my car locked, and especially when it's cold or whatever the case is, like, you know, if I need heat, it would have been like, you know, as that. It's just like, you know, really try to be deliberate and strategic. Sometimes I found safe parking lots, but again, like the lady was saying, the where not sure everything how things are, but still sometimes if police went through certain parking lots, they knew who you were. So it's just like, you know, it's just really being deliberate about where you were, as far as, you know, trying to be, but also realizing that trying not to catch COVID, it seemed like I would be safer in my car versus being someplace that was, you know, in some shelter where there was no vaccines or whatever the case is, and pre-existing conditions would place me in high risk otherwise.
Wow. Well, JB, I am really glad you called that so that you could really put the safety issue into context. And I'm glad to hear that you are no longer, you know, in your car and that you are moving up and moving on. Thank you so much for sharing with us. And you know, I think one of the things that you know, when you look at these shootings, okay, there is nothing that can protect you from random crime, whether you are homeless or not.
Mm-hmm.
You could be sleeping on the street, as we saw in the video in New York City, where that man was both shot and stabbed, I believe. Or you could be standing on the street in a brand new suit and brand new shoes, and you could still be the victim of a violent crime, as we have seen in this city all too often. And so I think, again, this goes back to the difficulties, the complexities of not just protecting the homeless population, but protecting the entire population. And again, our homeless population here in D.C. and across this nation continue to be particularly vulnerable. Let me go to the phones real quick. Tony, last call, calling from D.C. 30 seconds, Tony. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I'm a former worker with the shelter hotline, and I work with the homeless for a number of years. And I'm full of testimonies on their behalf, you know, because I wanted to define what the struggle was.
Mm-hmm.
And like you guys mentioned earlier, man, it's like they scared to go in. They don't trust being around other people that's not up to par with their hygiene. And it's a whole array of things going on with that. But like the other brother spoke, it's time to start something new. Because when they was closing shelters down, because they had us going out under the bridges everywhere, all the Northwest and everything, looking for these people. They could place them. And they had a meeting over here by the court building, and they was trying to figure out where to put them. One of the suggestions were send them to the penitentiary, because investing in homelessness, this is what they said now, the money is not, they're not getting, they're not benefiting from the money, the programs, stuff that they had allocated and, you know, that squeezed into the programs wasn't working. Nobody wasn't taking advantage of the programs. So they were saying, well, send them to the penitentiary.
Yeah.
You know, but then they started placing them in apartments, because we used to take them and transport them to the apartments, brand new apartments. They supposed to have caseworkers and people who supposed to gave them therapy and everything.
Yeah.
They didn't follow through on that part.
Yeah. Tony, I've got to stop you there, but I appreciate your phone call and I appreciate your observations and the work that you've done. Again, thank you. Dr. Hussein, thank you so much for your time with us. Kelly, always good to talk to you. Keep doing the work that you're doing as well.
It's been our pleasure. Thank you so much.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Friday, March 18th. For news director Renee Nash, reporters Millette Green, Bramante Bryant, producer Candace Wilson, and engineer Bobby Adams, I'm Harold Fisher. Good night and have a wonderful weekend.